Welcome, everyone, especially our assembly and mayoral candidates. Thank you for being here tonight. My name is Mara, and I'm here representing the Petersburg Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber Board decided to hold this forum to give a voice to the candidates and allow them an opportunity to share with Petersburg voters their position on certain issues. This will be a question and answer type forum, not debate style. Myself, Ben from the pilot, and Joe from KFSK will ask our own questions, and each candidate will have an opportunity to answer. We will ask you to keep your response to 2 minutes or less for time's sake, and Joe will be moderating, ensuring that no candidate is missed, and starting with a new candidate answering first each time. He will also give a 15-second warning before your time is up. Thank you again for being here, and let's begin.
Thank you, Mara, and I'll try to make sure everyone gets their chance to start first, so I'll just take a random order, and I'll start down at this end. This is the easiest question of the night. We'd just like to find out a little bit more about you and why you are running. So the question we'll start on this end with Mark is, please tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want to be elected to the mayor, or in other people's cases, to the assembly.
Okay, thank you, Joe. For people listening, my name is Mark Jensen. I'm a lifelong resident in Petersburg. I'm third generation here. I have two boys that have been raised here, and one plans to live here with a job, and the other one is off in college. I formerly had this post as mayor, and I resigned, and I was encouraged by people I respect in town to put my name in again for mayor, so I did.
Great, thank you, and you don't have to use your full 2 minutes. That's great too, because we got plenty of questions. So, next we'll go to Bob. Same question. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to be elected.
Yeah, I'm Bob Lynn. I've been on the assembly for a little over 3 years now, and running for the second term. I've just about got to the point where I know a little bit about what's going on. Definitely not expert by any means. I think we got some challenging times here ahead of us, and I'd like to be part to see if I can help kind of steer us through them. With that, I live off the grid. I live out of the Air Service Area 1, and so I look at it probably a little bit different maybe than some other folks. My wife and I are retired, and we kind of enjoy it here, and enjoy. I lived in Petersburg for about 5 years, and enjoy it. So, with that, I'll pass it on.
Thank you, and Ken. Thanks for joining us. And a question to you: please tell voters a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to be elected.
Okay, I've been here for 6 years. And you're way ahead of me. I don't have a clue of what's going on. I have been a little bit about myself. Self-employed truck driver for 20 years. I dabble in fiberglass fabrication a bit. And now I'm terminal manager at Samson Tug and Barge. As I said, I've been here 6 years. I very much enjoy it here. I want to retire here. I want to spend the rest of my life here when I'm not sailing around the South Pacific. In reading some articles in the paper, I was a bit dismayed of the lack of participation in this work, and that's why I am throwing my hat in the ring.
Okay. Thank you, and we'll keep going down the line and pretend like the people on the screen are next in line. So, Will, that a question goes to you. Please introduce yourself and tell why you'd like to be elected.
Well, again, my name is Will Ware. I'm 44 years old. I've been born and raised in Petersburg. I have a family of six, four boys, and absolutely have a love of Petersburg. I serve in a variety of different capacities on a number of different appointments and organizations, and none probably more important than the opportunity to serve back at the Borough Assembly in my hometown. And being born and raised in Petersburg gives me the opportunity to see history and to remember history, to know where Petersburg was, to be able to see where we are now, and to give me a strong opinion on where we should be going.
Thank you. Richard, the question to you.
Cindy Logadakis. I am currently serving as Petersburg mayor. Been on the assembly since 2013, and I moved to Petersburg in 2008 with a job with the Forest Service, although after 26 years I decided to retire and have been enjoying that. I've lived in communities from Yakutat to Anchorage to Juneau to Ketchikan, and I have to say Petersburg is the community that I call home. I think it's the richest in terms of resources and people and community spirit, and it's been an honor to serve on the assembly. I've really enjoyed it. My very first government experience was at age 29 as a planning commission member in Lincoln County, Oregon, when we developed our first county comprehensive plan, and I packed a two-month-old infant in a little car seat to go to meetings, and it was quite an experience. It was a really enjoyable learning experience. I've also been on, was appointed by the state to the Menahal Wetlands Citizens Advisory Group up in Juneau, and served as an ex officio member of a Parks and Rec Advisory Committee up there, as well as an interagency trails working group. So I've had a variety of government experiences, have really enjoyed it, and service is something that is important to me. When I moved to Petersburg, I became involved immediately in the formation of the Community Foundation and served as its first chair, and since then have been involved in a variety of both government and volunteer efforts. So just an outgrowth of my interest in public service.
Thank you. Brandy, you're next.
I am Brandy Marole. I'm 35. I'm a lifelong resident of Petersburg, my fourth generation. I'm a mother of three. I currently work at iSchool as an electrician. And I am interested in running because there's been some issues that have come up currently and that will be coming up that I'm interested in. And I would like to see a prosperous future for Petersburg in all aspects. That's why I'm here.
Thanks. And finally, Jeff.
Yep, my name is Jeff Miucci. I've been in Petersburg since 1982. I got involved in local politics back in the early 90s as a council member, or actually before that as the Parks and Rec member. I served on the city council for two terms and ran and was on as the mayor for two terms from 95 to 99. I'm interested in continuing the seat that I was appointed to in August to try and help the community address some of the issues that are going to be facing the city, or the borough. I think the hospital is going to be a big issue. But I just want to be a conduit for the community to kind of ask questions, and I can help them work through this tough financial time that we're all looking at.
Okay, thank you. The next question is going to come from Ben Muir at the Pilot, and I think we're going to go in the other direction. Hopefully our audio problems are figured out here. We had a little trouble broadcasting the Skype audio over the radio, but we can hear it here. Hopefully I've got that figured out. Question from Ben Muir at the Pilot, and we're going to start on the other end and go the opposite way, so we'll start with Jeff with this one.
Thank you, Joe. And this is for Jeff. Do you support the construction of a new hospital at a potential cost of $40 million or more?
No, not at this time. I think that the hospital board has a lot more work to do to identify what the community needs, and for the community to tell the hospital board what they'd like to see. $40 million is a lot of money. At this point, I don't support that unless there's some clear direction from the hospital board, which would happen with the council of the assembly as well.
Okay. Question to Brandy.
No, I am not in support of a new hospital either. I don't I can't say clearly what I do think that the long-term care at minimum needs a facelift. I have a grandma there. I know that it's, but you know what that entails? I don't know. I've looked at and read the whole report or assessment from Jensen, whatever the company was. I just have a lot more questions. I think there needs to be a lot more direction given before we're throwing $40 million out. We don't have the money right now. There's improvements that need to be made. I think that there should be tax money that's given to the hospital to help with maintenance and other projects that need to happen in the future. But right now, no. I do not think a brand new building is something that should be on the table.
Thank you. And to Cindy next.
Well, you may have to wave your arms at me at this one. I have a lot of thoughts about the hospital. The first thing I want to say is that the borough is supportive of the hospital, and I think in some of this narrative, that has gotten lost. The hospital is a really important component of this community. It's over 100 jobs. It's a lot of revenue. It's important in terms of things like long-term care and emergency care to our residents. However, the conversation about the hospital and the finances don't appear to be realistic right now. And you said $40 million. The estimate was $47 million. That didn't include the site. It didn't include the site prep. It didn't include any road building that might be needed or utility installation. And it wouldn't include the demolition or whatever would need to be done with the existing building. We haven't talked about who would own the hospital, whether the hospital foundation or whether the borough would own that. Bonding is an issue for the borough because the hospital is autonomous in their management of their finances. However, they're asking the borough to take the bond responsibility, and they don't have a taxing authority, so they're not able to do a general obligation bond. As far as revenue bonds, when you look at the finances, the borough has about $11 million of bonding, general obligation bonding capacity available. That's not far enough to even get us to the renovation portion of the hospital, which was estimated to be at about $16 million. So they've also talked about a capital campaign. I think that should start now because that will reduce the bonding capacity in the future. And I just got a wave from Mr. Vicknicki, so I'll stop.
Thank you. And people on Skype, Richard, the question to you.
At this time, I don't support the new hospital. I think it's just too early. I have concerns about what's going to happen with the existing building and the effect on the neighborhood in that section of town if a new one was constructed. There's a lot of stuff they still need to work out before it really is time to answer that question.
Okay, thank you. Will?
You know, at this point, I'd have to say no as well. It is really too early to be able to come up with a definitive answer of what exactly we could do or what the hospital could do. That being said, I did take some time to go up and walk through the hospital and met with Elizabeth Woodyard, and I met with Mike Boggs, and I believe their assistant administrator. I took a tour, walked through the facility, went through some of the maintenance rooms. I do have to say, sooner than later, something's going to need to be done with the hospital. Can the city afford $40 million? No. But does something need to be done? I was highly impressed when I was able to get up there and take a look with Mike and his department there and seeing what they're doing with what they have. We are definitely on a lot of aspects of that hospital, doubling the service life of the plumbing and the wiring and good portions of the hospital. But at this point, again, there's just so many questions that have yet to be answered. I think it is too early to be able to come up with a definitive answer of what can be done for the hospital. But at this point, my answer would be no.
Okay. Thank you. Ken?
Thank you, Cindy. A lot of information to digest. At this point, before we throw another $40 million building together, I think that the relationship between the borough and the hospital needs a little work. I think Cindy agrees with me on that. It sounds like she was leading to that. obviously the hospital is an imperative feature for the city. We can't do without that because it's only 100 miles to Juneau, but who's going to drive up there? But at this time, no, $40 million is not something that I would be prepared to sign off on.
Okay. And Bob?
It's an interesting question. I think we need some quality medical services in town. And I've attended numerous meetings with the hospital board and staff. I think we have a highly qualified, motivated, well-trained, and engaged group of professionals looking after our health care. However, I think we have lots of hurdles and many years before we have a community consensus on the need. How do we get there? First, I think we need to work on the relationships between the hospital and the assembly. There has already begun with Jay and I being appointed as assembly representatives to the hospital board. Next comes a look at the charter to see if we need to make changes and to have some open, candid discussions with the hospital board. At some point, both groups need to get active public engagement. We need to agree on an approach and then proceed in a systematic manner. At this point, I think that I've looked at the plans and the work that's been done by the contractors. I think I've seen three or four alternatives they've had. I think they've got some excellent ideas, but I think we're now at a point that we need to step back and take a look and actually go back to basics and see what we really need to do and what our needs are for the future.
Thank you. Finally, Mark?
I would have to agree with the majority of the people at this forum this evening. I don't think we can afford a $40 million hospital right now. Rural hospitals all over the country are failing, even if they own their infrastructure. So how are you going to, I'd have to see a pretty convincing business model or plan for the hospital before I could support it. I would be reluctant to support any bonding or any other kind of tax that would be imposed on the residents of Petersburg to build a new hospital. So with that being said, at this point, I don't support a new building, but I do think a hospital in Petersburg is very important.
Thank you. Next question will come from Mara, and I think we'll start in the middle with Cindy, work our way out one way, and then come around the other way. So first to Cindy on this one.
Revenue sharing from the state has been declining. The tax base in Petersburg is declining as well. What will be your approach to balancing the borough expenditures and revenues for the general fund budget?
Well, we've had a lot of internal conversation about this, and that's a slightly different question than the pilot posed to me, which was pick your three top things that you would choose. And my response to that is it needs to be a community conversation. We're talking about some serious declines in revenue over the next few years, and whether we are consolidating personnel or we're reducing services, I think those are things that Petersburg public needs to tell us what their priorities are. We can't make those decisions in a vacuum and shouldn't. And we've talked about, actually for the last 6 or 7 months, there's been conversation about what kind of forum we could do that in. So it's something that's weighed heavy on our mind, and I think you'll hear more about that in the future.
Thank you. We'll go next to Brandy on it.
Well, for me, I think that we need to, large capital projects needs to pretty much come to a halt. We've pretty much redone every building in town, minus the hospital. So that would be a huge one to start with. The second one, I think, would be eliminating a lot of contracted work that we can do in-house. We have a lot of talent here. We have the capabilities, and yet we contract out a lot of work. So that would be another way to save money. And then, beyond that, I think it needs to be more what the community is looking for.
Okay. Over to you, Jeff.
Well, I think we're all in agreement that revenues from the state and federal government are kind of going down. I think, for me, what I would like to do is at least hear from the community about what's important to them. If we keep the library open on a regular basis, the Parks and Rec open on a regular basis, if we want to have garbage pickup on a regular basis, or do we want to cut back on all that stuff? I think it's up to the community to tell us what's important to them. they don't have all the answers to take care of revenue shortfalls, but I'm looking forward to reaching out to the community so they can help me make those decisions when it comes time for budget preparations.
And let's go on to Skype. I'll go to Richard next.
Yeah, I agree with Jeff. We need to be looking to the community for suggestions on how to, what's important to us on how to deal with these revenue shortfalls. But there's some other things that we can do. We need to be looking at our municipal code. Are there changes that can be made to our municipal code that make it easier for folks who own businesses to generate more tax revenue for the borough? I'm not saying raise the sales tax. I'm saying, can we get rid of regulations that are hurting business?
Okay. And Will?
You know, I tend to agree with the vast majority of the folks here, but I think that we do need to take a look at pulling back on some of the capital projects that we've done over the last number of years. And I just don't think we can continue to be investing into those kinds of things as strongly as we have. You know, that egg's been cracked and scrambled, and we really can't put it back into that shell. But from this point forward, we can certainly, you know, demonstrate some real fiscal constraint when it comes into any further projects. I'm also in agreement that we need to be having a more greater dialogue with the community as to what is really important to them. You know, first of the things that we need to be discussing are the things that are not essential to the quality of life and services that we have here in Petersburg, and that's going to be open to debate among our community and even among our borough assembly members of what do we consider to be non-essentials. We have a great program where if our water and sewer goes out, we have Public Works getting to work on it right away. And we've seen an example of the state having a cut in DOT maintenance dollars and not plowing out past Blind Slough, or at some points Scow Bay Loop Road has been a discussion, and we've seen some community uproar over that. And so I think we need to have a real honest, open dialogue with our community over what is the non-essential programs that we have in our community that we could be looking at cutting back on. I also think, though, you know, cuts isn't the only answer as well. I think we need to be looking at continued economic development here in Petersburg, and I think we have a couple of opportunities that were going on here that we have on the ballot and some ideas that are going around town here that I'm not always just in favor of cuts, but if we're going to be looking at revenue shortfalls from the state and the federal government, then we need to be looking at some potential revenue generating opportunities that the borough has.
Thanks, Will. Let's go to Ken next.
Okay. Obviously, not having seen the budget or talked to any of the department heads, I don't know what their plans are. It seems like everybody's reading my notes. Dialogue with the community as to what services need to be maintained, what services are of less importance. Great point by Will about fostering a pro-business agenda, if we can, in whatever ways we can, and go from there.
Bob?
Budget is one of my biggest concerns looking at the next 3 years. I think that the borough budget is really the biggest gorilla on the plate for many of us. I'd like to be part of helping to tame that gorilla. I do not believe that we will see oil prices going back to where they have been in the past. And I could sit here for the next hour and argue that point, but I'll pass on that. But state government will have to reduce to match income, and that will be a continuing effort. There has to be new sources of revenue, probably both a sales and income tax at the state level. Both of those items will have a direct effect on each resident of this community. My concern is that the borough will be looking for revenue in addition to that, also trying to maintain services. The state continues to reduce funds that in the past have come to the borough. Money for new facilities and repair of old facilities has virtually ended. The borough has lost about $440,000 since a year after borough formation. We were lucky to get the payment in lieu of taxes receipt from the federal government, but the Secure Rural Schools funds that we've received in the past have been substantially reduced. I believe the future of the Secure Rural Schools funds is not assured. All sources of revenues from the state and federal government are and will be in flux for a number of years. That said, I think the Assembly has been doing a prudent job in putting money aside for the school. We have a few dollars for some repairs, but I think the well is virtually dry. For the past 3 years, the Assembly has been asking the manager to find ways to trim the budget. He said he and the staff have been doing that. Some folks say it's not fast enough. Others say it's wrong decisions. I think we need community support and community dialogue.
Thank you very much.
On this.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
And over to Mark.
We are in a fiscal crisis in this state, and we've saw this coming for the last few years. As I was, I've been on the council / assembly for 10 years or so, and we saw it coming with the oil revenue and Senate bills that have changed the oil taxes and so on. But I feel we're lucky that we had the money from the state to build the infrastructure that we have done, this building and the harbors and the fire department and stuff like that. But that's gone, because if we wouldn't have done that, we would have had old infrastructure that we couldn't afford to repair. But as far moving forward, I think this needs to be a discussion with all of the people in the public. If we have to cut either the library or whatever, the general fund budgets, it's going to be tough, or street plowing or whatever. It needs to come from the public. It can't just come from the elected body. So kind of in agreement with most of the people here. We do have some tough times ahead, and I would like to be part of seeing us through that.
Okay, thank you. I'll take the next question, and we'll start this in the middle with, let's go with Richard to start this first one. This question is on the Power and Light Department and the reorganization we heard a lot about this year. Are you in favor of the Power and Light Department in the borough being overseen by the Public Works Director, or would you rather advertise that job and hire a new Power and Light Superintendent or some other kind of oversight for that department?
I have a lot of respect for Carl Hagerman. He does a very good job at what he does. However, I did not support him being appointed to the current position he's in charge of Power and Light. I do believe that person needs to have an electrical background with the knowledge of the hydroelectric side of it. And yeah.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Will next.
Yeah, I would support advertising that out for an electrical engineer. I think it's important that as we have one of the best run power plants and facilities across the region, I think that comes directly from the top down. And I think it's important that we find somebody who's going to be able to have a vision for the years ahead with our hydropower. And again, known Carl my whole life, I think Carl is a great guy, highly intelligent, and can manage people phenomenally. However, I just think with this position here, we need to have somebody who's had a vision for the years ahead for us and experience as well.
Okay, we'll go to Ken next.
At first blush, when I first heard about that situation, my first thought was, okay, that's great. Save the borough $100,000 a year and have a manager managing a department rather than an engineer. People's brains work differently. It takes a very special brain to be an engineer. It takes a different kind of special brain to be a manager. And the two generally aren't the same. So I felt that was a good decision. I'm wavering a little bit on that, having spoken with some of the people in Power and Light and listened to their thoughts on it. And it might be that while the superintendent of the Power and Light Department doesn't have to climb a pole and de-energize a transformer to unhook it, it might not be a bad idea if it's somebody that actually knows what they're doing out there, as they pointed out to me, to have a backup for when their plans come to him. If they've missed something, he can catch it. So maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to have an actual electrical engineer in that position.
Thank you. And over to you, Bob.
I have a brother who is an electrical engineer with 40-some years of experience and spent a month here with me last summer. So we had quite a chance to talk about this issue. After our discussions, I firmly believe we don't need an electrical engineer as when we advertise a position. That said, I'm going to digress just a minute. I think we got a very highly competent, a very complex system with three different sources of power coming in. That requires a certain set of skills, and I think that over the years that the crew that is operating this has really shown a very strong dedication to upgrading that system. So I think that skills we have on board, I think, are very good. Does that position need to be advertised? Absolutely. Does that position need to have some skills? Absolutely. So with that, I think we also need to look at what we need to do to that system in the future, and that needs to be part of that selection criteria. And that whole look is not totally complete yet, and so that's where I'll leave it.
And Mark?
This was one of the issues that came up right before I resigned in May, and I was adamant about advertising the position. I think it's important to have someone, maybe not an electrical engineer, but someone that understands hydro development, hydro power plants, and diesel generation, and the whole grid. We're intertied with Ketchikan and Wrangell. It's pretty important that we have someone that understands the business of the electrical field. And I respect Carl 100% for what he does, but I don't, you know, if we advertise the job in such a fashion that he qualifies for it, I hope he puts his name in. But I think we need someone that's maybe not an engineer, like I said a minute ago, but someone that has lots of years of experience in this this field.
Okay. We'll go down the other end at Jeff.
I'm not really, it doesn't really matter to me who runs Power and Light. I'm just, you know, as an assembly member for somebody who's working and spending time in and out of town, I'm kind of, a lot of my decisions and information I'm making is based on what the city manager and the city staff brings to us. And if he can say to us that it's a great cost-saving measure to have it the way it is now, with Carl being the superintendent or the administrator and Scott being the man on the ground, I'd like to see how it works out. I'd like to keep track to see if it is actually saving us money. I mean, there's no hurry. We don't have to hire an electrical superintendent in the next 2 weeks. We can see how this plays out for the next 6 months. If it looks like it's not meeting the needs of the community, or we're spending a whole bunch of money on consultants in Juneau or wherever they're from, then we can go out and look for somebody who can meet those needs. But for me, I'm looking for city staff to kind of give us recommendation. I've talked to all the guys on the line crew, and they can deal with it for a few months. If it doesn't work out, I'm sure we'll hear from them. And that's what I'll be doing, is looking for them for a little bit of input. But, yeah, I'd like to see how it plays out, see if it is really saving us money.
Brandy, you're next.
All right. Well, considering this is the trade I'm in, I am completely opposed to not having somebody with electrical knowledge and skills. I'm not saying they have to be an engineer, but they should have at least a minimum of 6 to 8 years journeyman experience, or something equivalent, an electrical administrator, something like that. I think a lot of people don't really understand the vast knowledge that is required to understand power generation and distribution, along with the NEC is a code book that is very hard to navigate and should be known very well by anybody. Even though they don't have to follow the NEC, the person in charge, the superintendent, should be doing home inspections. You should know that book. I just think that like I said, you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody in this trade that would think that would be a wise decision, and that's where I stand on that.
Thanks. And Cindy?
Well, my understanding is that previous supervisors prior to the last one were not electrical engineers, and some rose up through the ranks with a variety of skills. Carl also brings to the table some different skills and some hydropower experience that the previous administrator didn't necessarily have. I think the pilot did a really good job a few months ago when they did an article on and talked to other electrical supervisors in other departments, and they highlighted administrative skills as being the important thing to have for that position. And I also think it's really interesting that we're talking about recruiting and doing all these other things right after we had the discussion about saving money, because that's an important thing that we keep talking about that we are going to have to do. And so some of the solutions that we come up with may be a little awkward at first, but I think we need to take that wait and see and see how things go. And I'd heard some criticism that the assembly was dragging their feet on making a decision. Part of that was we wanted to see how things would go. The other is that we've had people coming and going. As you can see, we've got people on Skype that weren't physically in the room, and we wanted to have a discussion with the full assembly before we made it a final decision on where we would go with that position. I think it's important that that department, including the superintendent or the supervisor, invest in training and make sure that we do have the knowledge and the skills that are necessary to run that department. I know that we cooperate with SEPA. We use Wrangell and Ketchikan, can draw on their skills to help us out. Consultants have been used in the past, and we are using them now to do work at our electrical department. I guess that covers it. I think we will take another look at it. It's not a final decision at this point, but for now we're getting projects up and running, and we've got a good start.
Thank you. Next question goes to Ben, and I think we'll start down on this end with Brandy first, and we'll work our way around. So, Ben, question to you.
Brandy, you actually kind of touched on this earlier, but for everyone, if you are interested in making budget cuts, whether you are or not, where are a few areas you would make those cuts? And give a few examples, maybe three if you can.
I feel like this question is really redundant, or maybe I'm just going to answer it that way. Yeah, like I said before, big capital projects need to come to a halt. We cannot afford that at this time. Using more in-house work as opposed to contracting out work that we are capable of doing in-house. The rest, like I said, I would need some more information and from what the community is looking for cuts that they'd like to see. I know that it's going to be tough on all of us if we have to cut services and personnel, so I think that that's something that really needs to be looked at, and that's not something I can say myself exactly what I would need to cut there. That's something that needs to be a communal discussion.
Okay, let's go to Jeff next.
I don't think there's anything that's off the table. I'd kind of like to go through all the departments and have everybody justify what they're doing. I think all the service organizations, whether it's the radio station, the Chamber of Commerce, whoever, I think we should look at any funding that we're giving them. I'd certainly like to look at any of the lobbying contracts that we have, both locally and federally, to see if we can reduce those funds and make sure that the people that we have on contract are providing the most for the borough assembly. But I think everybody's... All the budgets within the city are up for grabs, and I think we need to look at, you know, starting out at maybe our 10% budget cut across the board and see what effects those have on the community and those departments.
Thank you. We'll go around to this side. Mark?
Like we were talking earlier about reductions in budget or state funding, and if there is budget cuts that need to be taken, I think, like Jeff just said, there's nothing that's sacred. I would like public input if it's going to be any of the funding for like hospitals, or not hospitals, but for libraries and parks and rec along those lines, if they want the pool open one or two days a week instead of seven or whatever the day hours are now, but possibly reduce staff through attrition when people retire. If that's possible, with the PERS, they have to do the evaluation if, I can't think of the proper term now, but if you try to lay somebody off, you might have to still pay for that position with the state. But I think everything needs to be, looked at. But I don't think a straight 10% cut is the way to do it from watching other, things can be affected. I think you might have to take a little bit more from one than from the other, but I think it's going to be coming, though. We'd have to start cutting.
Okay, thanks. Bob?
That's a really hard question. I think we're going to have to just essentially kind of freeze positions, and I think we've tried to do that so that when anyone comes open, do we want to refill it? And so I think we got to get very much more proactive than we have been. I think, again, back, I think we need community input. And to me, nothing's off the table. The one I'm very reluctant, though, to reduce is our proportion to the school. I would like to, I'm not against taking some of it, but I'm also that'd be one of my last things that I'd want to give up. Other than that, I think that we need to get very strong, and rather than to just say cut, well, then we got the budget balanced this year, I think we have to go farther than that. I think we have to say, not only do we cut the budget this year in some way, but we go maybe 10% more or maybe 20% more, because we know that next year's is going to be less. That said, I think we also then have to reorient how and figure out how we're going to pay for maintenance of the facilities we have and some other things we have around here. And that's going to cost.
Okay, thanks. Over to Ken.
Okay. I think there are mission-critical departments that should be, if not completely spared, at least wait until there are just no other choices. I think there are frill things that can be cut heavier or earlier. But again, not having seen the budget, I don't know what the income is. I don't know what the budget is. So to answer a question blind, I really can't. Again, public input on what is important and what is of less important is going to make that job a whole lot easier to do.
Thanks. Will?
Yeah, thank you. I answered this as well a little bit ago, and I think that I would look at really cutting back on any kind of further construction projects that we have, capital projects. Again, I think we need to take a serious look at what are the non-essential departments that we have, and look and to talk with them and to find out if there's anything else that they can be doing to cut back on their budget. I did take a look at the budget. I've gone through each line item of each department, and it was posted onto the borough's website. And I think each department has a few lines that are within them that could be cut. One that just pops right out at the top of my head is professional services. I think almost all but two departments have an increase. Some of them have a 20% increase of professional services. And I think that's something that we need to be going through with a fine-tooth comb is not any one department, but every department taking a look at what is it that they have under some of those line items like professional services. And then again, I think I can't reiterate this enough. I think we need to really weigh out what it is that the community is willing to accept as a drop in the quality of life of services that we have and we offer our community.
Thanks. And Richard?
Yeah, this is also a tough question. I have looked at the budget, but nothing really calls out except for maybe, we definitely need to talk to the public and get their ideas, but like maybe something as simple as extending the replacement time period on some of the motor pool vehicles.
Okay, thanks. And Cindy?
Well, as everyone has said before, and I started out with the last budget question, I think community conversation is the key to this whole discussion. There are some other things, though, that we can look at, and we can do things like potentially we could combine positions, as we have tried to do over at the electric department. We may be able to change up some processes to be more efficient. We may be able to explore some public-private partnerships to get work done. Richard had a good point, and actually Carl Hagerman has a note in the assembly's inbox. They're looking at just that, extending the life of vehicles rather than rotating them out as often to squeeze out a few more dollars. John Mergus at an assembly meeting earlier this year suggested that we put a suggestion box out for people's ideas, and maybe now it's time to institute the suggestion box. But anybody can email any assembly member at any time, and we'd love to have your input. It's going to be a difficult conversation as time goes on. One other thing that I'd like to put a plug in for, we've got some young people sitting in the audience here, and that conversation is going to necessarily include younger folks, because we're building a community that they're going to have to live in. And it would be a great civics exercise to have that conversation in the schools about what do you value in your community, and what do you think we should let go, and what do we need to keep. And I would really think that we could have some valuable insights and probably some surprises from that, too.
Thank you. And this next question is going to come from Mara, and we're going to get one more question in here before we take a little break. Let us start in the middle of the room with Ken. We'll work our way around this way. I'm hoping I'm giving everybody their first chance to answer, so start with Ken on this one from Mara.
Okay. Some candidates already have touched a little bit on economic development, but answer again if you already have. How can the Assembly support economic development in Petersburg?
Tough question. Never having held public office, I'm not familiar with how to foster a pro-business community. Try not to spend too much money so we have to tax everybody into leaving. As Richard said earlier, try to keep unnecessary regulations to a minimum or eliminate them completely. And any other suggestions that people might have, I'd be willing to listen to.
Thanks. Bob?
Economic development, I really do believe, from my perspective, we need to diversify our economy. How do we go about that? Well, we have some money in an economic development fund. Not much. I think there's $4 million sitting there, and we're proposing to use part of that. But the part of it, I would have to say, is that I've watched economic development in many places I've been around the United States. And unless the community is in agreement, it'll never happen. So how do we start the community dialogue associated with economic development and what people are willing to support, and at when are folks willing to support it? I can come up with some really good ideas, but unless we have agreement and we have some kind of a partnership between the community and whoever's starting the business, I'm not sure we're going to get very far. I think it needs a lot more dialogue. I think it needs to have more dialogue with the assembly, and then maybe some formal way to go about it, although I don't have a smart idea off the top of my head how to do it.
Mark?
Well, as far as the assembly, supporting this, I think it should probably come from the Petersburg Economic Development Council and from the community on just bring ideas to us. And if it requires funding, like Bob was saying, I don't know what the balance is in the PDC fund, but when I was last on the assembly, I think it was around $4 million, but we're proposing to spend $500,000 of that for development of a marine park or a new haul out at Scow Bay. That's a in my opinion, a move in the right direction to improve that facility so we could haul bigger boats and maybe get some more boat repair people put to work, or at least more work for the people that already are in that field in Petersburg. But I don't really have a clear picture of what the best idea is.
Let's go to Will next on this one.
You know, I like the idea of the Marine Industrial Park. I've gone out and talked with John Mergus about it and picked his brain on some of the ideas that he has. I think one of the big issues that we have, though, in a community of Petersburg, as I've heard from some of the community members, is trying to find trained labor and trying to get people that have experience in a variety of different aspects of the diverse economy that we need. I'm thinking of computer repairs. I'm thinking of fiberglass work and woodwork. I think that what we ought to be doing is working with PEDC to come up with a committee, or maybe it's the committee of PEDC themselves, the nonprofit, to be able to go out and I guess this term isn't what exactly I'm looking for, but to be headhunting people that could be coming into our community to provide us some of these kinds of labor and skilled labor and technical training. And I think that would be vital for our community. I'm thinking of the Marine Industrial Park. I think if we had a community committee that could be looking for skilled woodworkers, fiberglass workers, and welders to be coming to our community, I think that would be advantageous for our economy. I also think, and this is kind of a point that's a little bit of a tangent here, but I think if we continue to make Petersburg a community that is conducive for young families, we're going to continue to see our community grow as well, where people want to stay here, where they want to start businesses, where they want to be raising their families here, and where their kids want to end up coming back home to live. And so we need to make Petersburg a family, young family, conducive environment.
Thank you. Over to Richard.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time digging through the municipal code as I was developing Proposition 6. There are things in there that really could be rooted out to make it easier for businesses to generate just regular sales tax revenue for the borough. One example is why does the fireworks stand have to set up outside of Service Area 1? Well, it's because the municipal code doesn't allow for it inside of Service Area 1. The cops can't enforce it anyway. So why are we causing her to not be able to generate as much tax revenue for the borough? Because she's got to set up 9 miles up the road. I support the PEDC and the development of Scow Bay. I think that will generate jobs and just trying to make town a better place for young people so they want to stay and work and live here and pay taxes. Because we're the ones that need to pay for everything anyway. Thanks.
Cindy, your turn.
Sure. I just got back from Southeast Conference on Saturday, and economic development is one of the things that was a topic of conversation. During the course of that whole conference, there's a report called Alaska by the Numbers, and Raincoast Data puts it together. It's on the web on Southeast Conference's website, and it gives a picture of the various economic sectors in Southeast Alaska and what their trends are and where some opportunities might be, and I think that for anybody to look at that, it's a good starting point. One of the things they talked about was AvTech, which is the Alaska Vocational Training. I sat down with Erica Clute Painter at the schools, and we were talking about a youth leadership idea, but she mentioned an initiative called 65 by 2025, which I believe is to look at skills that are necessary in your community and figure out how to provide that training locally so that people don't have to go away for training because it can be very expensive. I think, again, we can look at public-private partnerships and one thing, and mentoring locally. We've got seniors who have skills who are retiring that can offer their skills to train others. And Erica, you mentioned that Ole Whitethorn was coming to the vocational ed building and helping out there. Lots of things like that could be going on in the community. We could formalize those, and we could actually seek people out to fill training gaps. Some of it PEDC invited some folks to sit in, and there were only a few of us, on an Ocean Clusters Initiative teleconference that is ongoing every week. It happens every Tuesday. They're talking about building a blue economy beyond fisheries so that it's marine-related things, and kelp salsa is one of the things that came out of that. The Scow Bay Marine Industrial Park is one. The other thing is it's happening organically. We see young people in our community doing things like the market and small business opportunities.
Thank you very much. We need to let
that happen.
Randy, over to you.
Well, I agree that it needs to be, I mean, I don't have all the answers in that economic development as well as the community needs to weigh in on this and give out ideas as well. I think that as for the borough, I think that we can do a part in giving incentives to new businesses, whether it's leasing land for a lower price, whatever it is. I know in the past I've been told that there was a guy, Glenn Jones, I don't know, I was much younger. He was going to have this whole trim working, or trim, producing wood trim. He was going to bring 20, 30 families to town. And all he asked for was a reduced electrical rate. It would have generated a ton of money for the city. And they said no. Granted, at that time we weren't in a spot to need the revenue, but there are things that we as a borough, I think, can do incentive-wise. I realize that then you get into new other businesses that are there that would like the same breaks or whatever it may be, but if you're going to generate a lot of revenue and bring a business to town and you have a good business plan, I think that we can now also help out a little bit. And that's where I stand on that.
Okay. And Jeff?
Well, economic development's going to be the issue that drives this community. I think it's important that the Chamber of Commerce and the borough send people down to Seattle to the trade shows, the regional shows that are going on down south, so that people can see what a vibrant, clean community we have. It's a good place to do business. I don't think the borough should get in the way of somebody who wants to open a business here. I think it should be an open conversation with whoever wants to come in and set up a business. Reduced rates or getting land squared away so somebody can come in and reduce some of their initial costs. I'm real excited about the Marine Center out at Scow Bay. I think it'd be a great opportunity to look into the idea of maybe putting a regional science center out there. We have some great salt water out there. It'd be a great place to put a small facility out there for the high school to use, for the people who are in and out of town doing either whale research or glacier research, but I think we have the opportunity to do something like that. And to make sure that the schools are getting the kids in town prepared for life. I know they're doing that now, but if there are some trade issues that people need help on, whether it's welding, electrical, or refrigeration, those are all as important as going to college for this community, and I think those are things that we just need to make sure it's being taken care of.
Great. Thank you very much. At this time, we're going to take a 5-minute break and let the candidates stretch their legs, and we'll be back in 5 minutes. I'm fine.
All right. You're listening to live broadcast of the Candidate Forum, where Petersburg's candidates for assembly and mayor in the upcoming municipal election are discussing the issues. It's a great program. We appreciate everybody's time down there, and hope you're enjoying. And we will, of course, rebroadcast this for you. I believe we're going to do so on Sunday evening before the election. The election is coming up on Tuesday. So we're going to let them take a little break down there. I'll take a peek at the community calendar while we wait for them. A message from the Petersburg Harbor Master urging boat owners to check on boats in the harbor. Heavy rainfall today and expected to continue for the next several days if the forecast is to be believed. But heavy rainfall, so keep an eye on those open boats. A heads up that commentaries under KFSK's open airwaves policy that relate to Petersburg election can be aired through Monday, but not on election day. To record a commentary, the deadline is 5 p.m. Friday. Call Tom or myself here at the station, 772-3808, to set up a recording time. Let's see. Absentee ballots for the Petersburg municipal election are available. if you'll be absent on Election Day or you wish to vote early. Ballots are available in the borough clerk's office in the municipal building through Monday at noon. The deadline to have a ballot mailed to you is Thursday at 5. State cross-country meet will be held Saturday, September 30th in Anchorage. The Petersburg's girls team are the Region 5 division champions and are going to state, and the Petersburg boys finished second in the region and are also competing at state. The teams will be returning to Petersburg on Sunday, October 1st. Congratulations and good luck from KFSK. For those out there wanting to participate in further, deeper civic engagement, well, by golly, Petersburg residents can file as write-in candidates for the upcoming borough election for some of the vacant seats. Letters of intent must be filed with the borough clerk's office by 5 p.m. Friday. Again, the election is Tuesday, the 3rd. And we'll leave it with that. Birthday wishes going out to Jane Kawashima, Ron Bushman, Ed Crawford, Ian Braun, Deanna Phillips, and Heath Whitaker. We'll just play a little bit of music here while we wait for candidate form to resume up there at Petersburg Borough Assembly Chambers. You'd be welcome to mosey on there and see it live, too, but we're bringing it to you over the airwaves. This will be up on the website soon and will be rebroadcast Sunday before the election. In with one more announcement before we, turn our ears back to the assembly for the candidate forum. The community pool is closed today and tomorrow. This was an unexpected closure, but we just want to let you know, lap swim, leisure pool, those are unavailable. The pool is closed tonight, and Viking Swim Club practice is canceled for today and tomorrow, and we'll keep you posted about when that's reopening.
Welcome back. Thanks for tuning in to Petersburg Chamber of Commerce Candidate Forum. We have everyone seated, and the next question will be mine again. I will start this one. I think it's Will's turn to have a question first, so we'll throw this first question to you. And I would like to get in a little bit more about the Scow Bay Marine Boatyard plan, and there's a ballot question voters will be deciding next week about spending $500,000 for design work on that project. How are you voting on that? Are you voting yes or no? Why? And do you see what's the next step for funding what could be a $7 million project out there?
Yeah, you know, I'm all about trying to see that Marine Industrial Park taken off and supported. I've stated that from the very beginning of my candidacy. I'll be honest, I would probably, while I'm going to vote yes in favor of it, I would probably feel more comfortable, and I'd be more in favor of us actually taking $500,000 and developing the current space that we have now. Again, I am voting in favor of this, but I would be more in favor of taking $500,000 and developing the current land that we have, whether that is using it to buy Connexes and putting some fabric or wood roofs on those. So we're making some dry sheltered areas out there specifically for a woodworking, another one for a fiberglass, and another one for a welding location. And that way we would be immediately, starting as soon as this fall or this winter, being able to keep some of these boats that go to our neighbors to the south, that we keep those dollars right here at home. And I think everything from buying nuts and bolts to fiberglass resin to the fiberglass mat to welding supplies, all that could be bought here locally and the labor done here locally, I would be more in favor of that. However, I'll vote in favor of continued design development.
Okay. Thanks. We're going to go this way on this one. We'll go to Ken next on that question.
What he said. I'm very much for it. That's an economic development situation that to a certain extent, I feel the borough could do nurture some business growth there.
Bob?
I was the lone dissenter of putting this on the ballot, so my vote on it will be no, and I have multiple reasons why. Is that I think that the plans that the economic development group came up with are excellent. But I think what we haven't, though we haven't been totally straightforward with the public. The end result of this, the cost estimate is a little over $7 million. Where is that money going to come from? We have multiple uses out there right now, and we haven't resolved those uses. And I'm talking now about, we have a fire facility there. As soon as we get a boat facility, they're going to be in conflict. What are we going to do with it? We have opportunity here, I think, to provide better fire service out the road, but we haven't addressed that yet. I don't think we've been totally straightforward with the public. Also, on once we get the permits for this, we have a certain amount of time to do it. So there will be a very strong push to go forward to finish it. I think it's an outstanding project, and I would also say that I think that there's time. We have a chance here for multiple types of new businesses, which we haven't seen, and we haven't even begun to explore that, but yet we want to go ahead and build all these plans. I think we need to back up and take a year to do this and to explore this all the way through. So accordingly, also I would say that we could spend $50,000 and significant by throwing that breakwater out farther and increase the use for 20 to 30% over what we have now.
Thanks. Mark?
Yeah, I will vote for this on the ballot, this proposition to spend the money to move forward with this. Where we're going to come up with the funding for a $7 million project, you know, I don't know, but I think to move forward with the plans and get it to, I don't know if it'd be a shovel-ready status or not. I haven't looked at the details of the proposal here. I don't know if you can use, if this qualifies for harbor money. We can do matching grants, but still, if that's 50-50, where are we going to come up with the $3.5 million? So we do need to keep a lot of the boat repair work in town, more than we have been, but as far as the city getting involved in building the connexes and everything out there, I don't know if that's the right approach. If we build a facility with a washdown pad and a better haul out so you could haul larger boats, then I know there's one gentleman in town, Steve Berry, that's trying to put together a setup similar to what they have in Wrangell. Fortunately for Wrangell, they had a lot more money, timber money that they got back in the 80s, whenever that was, than we did. They got 20-some million, we got six, so that helped their development of their yard. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea to move forward with this.
Okay, we'll go to Richard next.
Oops.
Richard? Are you got your audio on?
Oh, I had it muted. I'm sorry.
There we go.
I think the Scalp Bay project is a good idea. I am going to vote yes in this. I think we have a good opportunity to at least partially copy what Wrangell's done, and they're doing tremendously well there. I seem to remember from a few of the public meetings that this would be a phased project, so it isn't necessarily coming up with the $7 million all at once. We can build portions of it. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. Cindy?
First, I want to correct something that I said before about the economic report. It's Southeast by the numbers, if anybody wants to go look that up, and it's on the Southeast Conference website. I will be voting for this, and I did vote for it in an assembly meeting. It fits with the Harbor Master Plan, and the idea is that the money will be leveraged by state and federal grants. I agree that it's probably going to have to be a phased project, but if we don't put any skin in the game, it makes it harder to attract money. So that's the purpose of that. And that's also something to consider with other projects as we move forward, is as we cut budgets, we need to remember that sometimes we're going to have to prove up a little bit to be able to attract money as well. I met a gentleman on Friday who comes up to Petersburg every year, and at the end of the season, he takes his boat to Wrangell because he can't pull it out here. And he had high praise for our harbor master and our harbor facilities, but is not able to use them because his boat is too big. So I think that this will help address that situation. I am concerned about the user conflicts. That's something we need to flesh out. However, I haven't really heard the folks from the fire department raise too many concerns about that yet. So it sounds like that's a conversation we need to have in the future. And the breakwater extension is actually something that was talked about as being a part of the project. And I think that that's a good idea as well. So that is something that I am in favor of, and we'll be interested to see how it moves forward.
Okay. Brandy?
I, too, am in favor for this. I think that it's a good start to bringing a lot of boat work back to Petersburg, which we've lost a lot to Wrangell. And I think it's a good start, and I will be voting yes for that.
And Jeff?
Yep, I'm going to vote for it. I've been over to the Wrangell shipyard many times, and every time I go over there, I think to myself, we are missing an opportunity here. There are small businesses popping up all around the shipyard. I see that happening here at the Scalp Bay facility. I'm not too concerned about the user conflicts. I think we'll sort all that stuff out. The finances, I'm not an expert in finances, but that's what we have city staff to help take care of those kind of issues for us. They'll bring stuff to us, so we'll talk about it. We'll sort out what's best for the community. But like I said earlier, I think we have an opportunity to maybe possibly put a regional science center out there that we could piggyback, maybe some funding to kind of do some science work out there. And maybe piggyback maybe some NOAA funding or National Marine Fisheries funding. But yes, I'm in favor for it. I think it's a great chance for this community to kind of kickstart what's going on.
Thank you. This next question is going to come from Ben. I think who's the last person who hasn't gone first? Richard, is it your turn for the first question? I think so.
Hey, Richard. Is it important for there to be a Coast Guard base in Petersburg, and how could the assembly keep the Coast Guard base here?
That's a very good question that I don't know much about. I do value having the Coast Guard here, but I don't know much about that issue. I'm sorry.
Okay. Let's go to Jeff on this end over here.
I'm a big supporter of the Coast Guard. I think it's very important out there in this community. Nobody thinks much about the Coast Guard until the weather's like it is right now and it's dark out, and they have to call somebody to come and give them a hand between the Coast Guard Auxiliary, the Anacapro, you know, to come out. During the summer, we train with the Coast Guard helicopter out of Sitka for work. I think it's up to the community to kind of, and the assembly, to talk with the Coast Guard to figure out what their plans are and how we can make sure that the Anacap and the Elderberry are here. And those are families that are in town. Those are houses that are in town. Young families, they're buying groceries and stuff, and I think it's important to keep them in town, and I think the assembly should have that as one of their big priorities to make sure that we address that issue and make sure that they're here for the long term.
Randy?
I agree as well. I support the Coast Guard, and they do generate a lot of revenue here and bring children to the schools, which also helps the schools out. Again, like Jeff said, you know, we kind of split the middle down the down southeast. It's nice to have them know that they're close by. You know, we're right between Juneau, Wrangell, and or Juneau, Ketchikan, and then having someone here, I think it's, you know, it's a little reassuring, especially considering a lot of our loved ones are out there, and a lot of our loved ones have been lost, and I'd like to see them stay here as well.
Cindy, next to you.
Sure. I am definitely in favor of having a Coast Guard base here. They benefit the community in terms of law enforcement and safety. One aspect that people have not talked about is the number of families that are in town and the students that are in school as a result of those Coast Guard families, and the economic benefit of having Coast Guard families in town is important. One thing that you can do is talk to your congressionals. The Coast Guard themselves don't seem to have a lot of capability to influence where they're based. I did get a chance to talk to one of Lisa's staff at Southeast Conference about our concern to keep Coast Guard presence in our community, and she said that at this time there's no plan to move them out, but we're worried about when the Anacapa ages out and gets rotated potentially to another community, maybe Ketchikan. When the fast response cutter was here, came in and had public tours, I talked to the commander, and they're concerned about the response distances. They now have responsibility from Ketchikan to Yakutat, but they're based out of Ketchikan, and there's only the helicopters out of Sitka. That's an awfully long distance to have to travel if there's an emergency. One thing that we mentioned to them and also to Murkowski's staff is that they have not been tasked with drug interdiction on our transboundary rivers, and we're trying to get that on their radar as one reason why they should be in Southeast Alaska and more communities, and that's something important to us, particularly with the opioid crisis that everybody has heard about. We need to pay more attention to that, and that's a potential hook for keeping the Coast Guard in our community. So, with that, I'll let it go.
Thanks. Will, to you next.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to take it a step further. I just don't think it's nice to have them here in our community. I think it's vital to have them here in our community. And I think it's greatly important that we stay in constant communication with our congressional delegation. And we need to be finding out what it is that we need to be doing as far as a borough to make sure that we can maintain two of the ships that we have here. There has been discussion in the past of replacing the Anacapa-style ships to a larger ship, and if that indeed is going to happen, I'm not certain that it is or not, but if that is indeed going to be happening, that's something that we need to be prepared for as a borough. The amount of revenue that having this government, the Coast Guard, in our community is invaluable, and I just don't think that's something that we can afford to lose. And, I think some of the folks have already listed off some of the benefits that it brings to it. But again, you know, I think when we look at our congressional delegation and we look at some of the Air Force bases that were looked at getting closed up north, we see that didn't happen. And so I think we need to take a really strong stance with our congressional delegation to ensure that the Coast Guard stays here in Petersburg.
Okay. And to Ken.
I could say that I support the Coast Guard as well. I'm actually in the Coast Guard Auxiliary. So, yeah, it's absolutely vital that we keep the Coast Guard here if there's any possible way we can. And no stone should be left unturned.
Bob?
I'm totally in support of keeping the Coast Guard here. When they change ships, and I think it's, what, 2 or 3 years approximately, if we were to get the new boat, and I can't remember the numbers on it, but you're talking 26 to 30 people that would be in, and which would actually be an increase over where the Anacapa is. That adds, you know, another, what, $3 to $5 million to this community. And yeah, absolutely, we need that. We've had in the past multiple conversations with the Coast Guard trying to keep that here. We've asked our lobbyists to put that as, you know, a priority, and they've done that. The one discussion we haven't had is that the new ship is longer, than what the ANICAP is. So we'd have to change the berthing space and or do something to increase it. We've had a number of discussions with the Assembly. The question I have, though, is if they come back to us and say, hey, we want to come, but we as an Assembly or as the local government haven't really taken a position on what we could or should be doing in order to be able to answer that question, and that needs to take place.
Mark?
This was one of the most frustrating things for me when I was the mayor the last few years. I've met with the former admirals, Admiral Abel, and then his replacement, his name eludes me right now, and then Captain Green from Juneau. I've also talked with Don Young when he was in town, and Senator Sullivan, and they were going to work on urging the Coast Guard to at least give us an answer what they were going to do. The best we know for sure is they're going to replace 7 Anacapa class boats with 6 of these FRCs. I went to the commissioning of the John McCormick in Ketchikan in conjunction with the SEPA meeting and talked with a lot of the Coast Guard staff, and hey, you could ask them until you're blue in the face and they won't give you an answer what they're going to do. So how do you prepare for that by increasing your moorage space in town? I don't see how you can, because build it and there will come, I don't think is the right answer. But eventually the Anacapa class boats are going to be decommissioned, and I think it's very important to have the Coast Guard in town. The Elderberry came here right after it was built. You know, as a buoy tender, it's been here its whole life. I know the Anacapa has been here at least since 1965. I was in fourth grade, and my teacher, Mrs. Coral's husband, was the skipper on Cape Coral, and we got to go for a ride on it. And they were, you know, they help with the little baseball teams and around town, and it's a would definitely be an economic loss if they were to pull out. The discussion has been had with people about trying to get a big buoy tender here, but I don't know if we have the upland space to store the buoys. You look at the Ketchikan yard, and it's impressive.
Thanks. All right, this next question is going to come from Mara. Let's start way down at the other end and go back to the straight across. We'll start with Jeff first on this question.
I think that everyone tonight has mentioned that you'd like to have community input or community conversations. If elected to office, how will you go about getting that community input?
My cell phone number is out there. People don't seem bashful or call me about that. On the Assembly right now, we get emails from the community right now. Just wandering around town talking to people, going to different forums that might be there, whether it's the homeless forum or the school board or the hospital board. Just more or less just talking to folks, letting them know some of the challenges that we're facing and some of the shortfalls that we're looking at in funding, and getting opinions from people on what they're thinking, as opposed to, I'm not going to be telling people what I'm thinking. I'm more about listening to what people have to say and seeing how we can meet the needs of the community.
Brandy?
I would have to say that, yes, you know, I'm elected. I'm free anytime. Call me, email me, whatever. I like the idea of a suggestion box, just so that people can throw something in there anonymously. Also, I think mostly it would probably be just me bebopping around town, talking to people and getting their opinions on things.
Go to Cindy next.
I have to agree with everything that's been said before. I think, informal coffees and receptions with various groups is not a bad way to have a conversation with folks that maybe takes it down a notch, so that folks don't get anxious about getting up in front of a group and having to speak, or getting really tense about a situation. For more tough issues, I think it's worth having some facilitated discussions with an outside facilitator. There's a lot of things that people are really emotionally invested in this community, and sometimes it's best to have somebody who's not a part of the community help guide that discussion. And then I agree, just walk about downtown. People do find your phone number and find you on the street. The other day I was trying to walk through town, and I had a whole little route I was doing. I was intending to get over to Sandy Beach Road, and by 6 o'clock I'd made it as far as the post office. So folks make an opportunity to talk to you when you're out and about.
Richard.
I'm involved with a lot of stuff through town. Even if I get elected to assembly, I'm still going to be involved with planning and zoning. I'm involved with fire. I'm around. It's not that easy. Not that hard to find me. I talk to a lot of business owners. I'm very responsive to email and phone and the like. Yeah.
Will?
You know, as public servants, I think that we have an obligation to be engaging with organizations in our community. I think that one of the things I wanted to get across is that I think that we ought to be taking the initiative to be meeting with industry leaders in our community. And that goes from the cold storage and the seafood processors to a variety of different organizations that we have. I think it's our obligation as public servants to be engaging them. I also think that we ought to take a time to have town hall meetings. And I'm not so certain that those need to be facilitated and feel all programmatic, but I do think that we ought to be having some town hall meetings where folks have the freedom to come and express to the borough assembly. And I'm not certain if that happens quarterly or biannually or annually. I'm not certain how that would happen, but I think there's some real value in having some town hall meetings. So there you have it.
Ken?
Good suggestions at all. I think more even than any of these individual ideas, just be willing to be accessible and open and coax people to talk and listen.
And Bob?
Well, I'm certainly accessible, and people have found my email quite often. So, but I do think we need to have some forums, particularly related to the budget. Whether they're facilitated or not, I don't know the answer to that. I also think they need to be structured in such a way that when we actually go away from those, that we have some different ways or some things to pursue rather than scratching my head like I've been to a lot of meetings in the past. And maybe just sitting here thinking about it, but we probably need some professional suggestions of how to approach this, other than just our own ideas here. And that particular topic, I think, needs discussion amongst the assembly at a later date here.
And Mark?
Well, this is a tough one. I mean, how do you get the community to come and give their opinion? Over the 10 years as an elected official, the times this room was the fullest was when there was a contentious topic, and the place is full, no matter if it's 9 o'clock at night or 8 in the morning. But it'd be more, you know, and I've told people, I said, you know, don't complain after the fact. Be involved. Come and, give us your, give the assembly your opinion. And, maybe town hall meetings, would work. But, until there's a hot topic, like cutting someone's favorite, time at the pool or time in the library or something, and I don't know how to get them involved. Maybe Bob's right. Ask for, some professional advice on how you get people involved. But I've got the same response from, people all over the state. It's hard to get community input unless there's a contentious issue.
Okay. And I'd love to take this follow-up question. I'm going to start with Mark and go back down the other way. Do you, as a candidate, have the time to devote to this elected position, meaning are we going to see you at most or all of the meetings in the next couple of years if you're elected to this spot?
Well, if I get reelected to mayor, it'll be the same thing. I can't give up my business. I'm, not retired. I have two businesses, actually, a welding business and a fishing boat that I run. I do have pretty good phone service on the boat, so I could call in. But then again, it would be, whoever was running the meetings would be chairing it, and I would try to attend as many as I can.
Bob, to you next.
Yeah. No, I think you can look at my last 3 years. I have a pretty good track record of attending almost all the meetings, just a few. And, yes, I don't see that changing in the future. I have the email, and I do make a special effort to come to town, talk with folks when folks want to. I try to combine many of them in one day as I can, but I'm about as accessible as you can get, and I'm willing to study the issues that come before us.
Ken?
Yes, I absolutely will be at every meeting. They happened during my lunch break, and if it stretches, I've got somebody that can cover for me after that. In addition to that, I'm a very accessible person, so my phone number will be out there, my email will be out there, and I love to talk and I love to listen.
Okay. And Will?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had this question posed to me on a number of different occasions. You know, I work 3 days a week up in Juneau for Central Council Clinkett and Haida. However, I still maintain my family and my home in Petersburg, and so I have no intent of changing that, and Petersburg is always going to be my home. That being the case, I've also have approached my bosses, and as a manager at Central Council Clinkett and Haida, they've given me the ability to have a flexible work schedule to be accommodating to this appointment or this election, rather. And so if I was elected to the assembly, I'd have an altered work schedule to be.
Richard.
Yeah, I had a really good attendance record on planning and zoning the last couple of years. I make it to every fire drill that I'm in town for. I do travel a fair amount for work, but generally I'm near a phone, and I don't have any problems making it to my planning and zoning meetings, so I don't see how this will be any different.
Cindy?
Well, my boss is sitting in the back of the room, and we have a pretty good working relationship. So I'm retired, so I have some flexibility there, and have made the majority of the meetings. As long as I get a trip or two in to see grandkids, I anticipate I will have enough time to commit to being on the borough assembly.
Randy?
Yes, I don't see that being a problem. My employer's pretty good at being flexible with my schedule. I don't think I had a problem making school board meetings and policy meetings, and I don't see how that would be any different here. And unfortunately, I don't have the money to travel all over like I'd like, so I'm pretty much in town.
And Jeff?
Well, my job has me going in and out of town on a regular basis, but over the last 3 months, it seemed like I was in town for a lot of the meetings. Like Mark said, I'm not retired. I need to work, and I'll do the best to be in all the meetings that I can be. We have good cell phone coverage on the boat or wherever I'm at, and I can certainly participate via teleconference or Skype.
Okay, thank you. Next question will come from Ben, and let's start with Bob on this one.
Bob, how do you think the Assembly should address homelessness in Petersburg?
Well, the first thing I think... I think that we need to understand the extent of the problem, and then also define, you know, what, not only the extent, but what we need to address. What parts of it are we talking about? Housing, or are we talking about drug use, or what are we, and what parts of it? And before I can answer that directly, I need a lot more, you know, information. Whether it be from a white paper or whether it be from presentations, I don't know. It could be either way. But I need a lot more data before I can say yes, no, or where we need to go from here.
Let's go to Ken next on that one.
Yeah, I'm not aware of homelessness in Petersburg. I've heard of people hanging out at the ferry terminal for a night or something like that, but I'm with Bob. I don't know the extent of the situation or what causes it. So I don't know.
Okay. Will?
You know, I think we have a homeless coalition in Petersburg now, and I think that they've met a few times. I think, again, I think it's important for the Borough Assembly to get involved with the Homeless Coalition so that we can be educated on how many folks are couch surfing, how many are actually homeless and living in tents, and how many are working poor that are on the verge of losing their places. I think we need to take some time to educate ourselves on that and work closely with an organization that's already getting formed. I also think that as a municipality, as a borough, it opens us up to greater funding opportunities for grants through the federal government to be able to address some of these issues. And I think certainly we could be working closely with this situation before it gets worse. And I think we need to be proactive on it. I think we need to be talking to the folks that are local experts on the issue. and seeing what it is that is a need that we can meet.
And Richard?
I know we have a homeless coalition that just formed. I went to the last meeting. One of the things that we can do is we're currently working on rewriting the zoning ordinance for town, and that's going to be coming out this fall to open to the public for comments and such. One of the things we can do is ensure that this new zoning code helps deal with the problem of the lack of affordable housing that's of any decent quality in this town. It allows for tiny homes and modern manufactured homes and stuff that makes it easier for folks to be able to survive on a tight income in this town.
Cindy?
Well, actually, up until this last meeting, because I was out of town, I've been attending the Homeless Coalition meetings, and it's been a very interesting discussion and an interesting cross-section of people in Petersburg who have attended. I've been surprised at some of the folks that have shown up. It's a really good conversation. They're making an effort on making an assessment of what our homeless population looks like. It appears there are about 20 to 40 people who are homeless in Petersburg, some by choice, some because of drug and mental health issues, and potentially some who are couch surfing or other things just because economics don't work out so well for them. So solving that problem is different for each of those different populations, and there's a lot of things that come with that. I've talked to the police chief a little bit about what it would look like if we would be able to provide some kind of a shelter here in Petersburg. And the Homeless Coalition has talked about the need for training and 24-hour supervision if we did come up with something like that. So there's a lot of conversation that needs to be had. However, as the group has pointed out, cold weather is coming and we've got people outdoors. So I think I would encourage other people to participate in the meetings, particularly if they have resources or ideas. And be aware that it is something that isn't going to go away and other communities are dealing with it. In fact, every place I travel outside of Petersburg, I see more homeless every time I go to larger population cities. It's not a problem that's going away, so it is something that we have to address. Do I have the best answer? No, but I'm certainly willing to listen, and I want to try and be part of the solution.
And Brandy?
I, too, do not have the answers. I know that there are people that just have are suffering from just financial crisis, but a lot of it's addiction, and if I could figure that out, well, I wouldn't be here. I'd be somewhere else because I'd be a billionaire. So I don't know. I don't have the answers, and it's definitely something that needs to be addressed, and how you fix that, I don't know.
Jeff?
Well, I don't think there's really any local experts on homelessness in our community. I was at the meeting last week, and you could see the people who were involved with the Homeless Coalition struggling to kind of form an organization so that they can at least reach out to the people that put on that meeting last week and try and sort out how many homeless people are in Petersburg and what they need. It seems like there's a discrepancy between what some people feel are homeless. You hear the number 40 to 60 people, and then if you talk to the police department, you hear numbers that are substantially lower than that. So I think until we kind of flesh out with the Homeless Coalition, trying to figure out what the questions are and how we're going to meet or define how many people are homeless in Petersburg, we can't really know how to go forward. So I'm looking forward to seeing how the Homeless Coalition kind of proceeds here over the next couple of months.
And Mark?
Well, I've been hearing about this and understand there is a coalition, reading the news and listening to the radio, but I haven't been involved in any, of the meetings. I don't know what the assembly can do to address this. I guess, one, assess the size of the problem, and then talk about how we can afford to work with it. I mean, we're talking shrinking budgets, and this doesn't seem like some issue that's going to not require some funding. Maybe there's grants. I don't know. I'm uneducated on this one, so if I was elected, I'd have to get up to speed.
Okay, thanks. So next question will come from Mara, and let's start in the middle of the room with Cindy on this one.
All right. Although ultimately the Assembly is not responsible for increasing any tax rates, would you support an effort to increase sales tax or property tax in order to balance the budget, as in an effort to get it put onto the ballot in coming years?
You know, that's a conversation that's going to have to be, in, will be wrapped up in how we address budget shortfalls and if there are other ways to accommodate shrinking budgets. We've had a big internal conversation about senior sales tax exemptions. This is something that will get me not elected right away to bring this subject up. But we lose about $800,000 annually in senior sales tax and in property tax exemption for seniors. And I don't think that, that's a number that we can ignore. And there are people who cannot afford to pay more. Other communities have addressed it by, you know, reserving out sales tax, taking out things like food and heat, and exempting those from sales tax and only taxing luxury or other items. And that might be one approach we look at in the future. But we have an increasing senior population. That number, that $800,000 number, is only going to get bigger. At some point, it's going to smack us in the face. In fact, I think we're just about there now. And if people can afford to go spend the winter in Palm Springs, they can kick in a few more bucks. I'm sorry. That's just the reality. And I think if we want to have a healthy community and a future for our kids, where we may have to be a little uncomfortable and pay a little bit more.
Let's go to Richard next.
Sorry, the mute button again. good question. I'm totally fumbling here. We got a. The question was, would I support a raising sales tax? And I think that's an inevitable question. It's going to have. We're going to have to figure that out. Initially, I think that there are some more things that the Assembly can do to generate revenue for the borough before it comes time to look at raising sales tax. I think raising sales tax and property tax should be a very last resort. We can't pay our bills. Or we really have to have these services, otherwise we're going to have to raise the taxes. And I'm not sure we're there yet.
And Will?
Yeah, I think at any time where you're going through any kind of economic struggles in a community or a state or at the federal level, I always think raising taxes is the absolute last resort that you need to go to. And I think that we definitely need to take a little bit closer look at our budgets and individual line items in those budgets and you know, and just making taxes the last option here. But as I understand it, it's a discussion that's going to be coming up with the next assembly here this winter, and if not for now, for definitely in the future. And one of the reasons why I want to make sure that I want to get elected is so that I can make sure that we're protecting our most vulnerable members of our community and our society here in Petersburg, and not create, any additional stress or hardships on the most vulnerable. And I think that there's a few different ways we can do that. It was talked about a variety of different exemptions that are out there. Juneau certainly does sales tax exemptions for folks who are elders, who they exempt things like food and utilities and electricity and heat, and that's an option for us as well. But I also think that there's another option out there that is going to protect our most vulnerable, and that would be going through a tier system that's based upon income. But again, I am initially not in favor of wanting to see taxes. I'm more interested in economic development and certainly maybe some other cuts to our budgets if we need to prior.
Ken?
I think it's more important to learn how to say we can't afford that than to just say, let's find somebody else to force some money out of. So no, a sales tax increase would be the absolute last choice.
Bob?
This is part of that 800-pound gorilla I talked about earlier. sales taxes, and if you forecast them out, are going to remain flat for the borough or maybe decline a little bit. Property taxes, about the same. And as we increase wages, as we increase or even maintain the services we got, the revenues, the income, and the outgo don't match. So something's got to be done. That goes back to that forum that we talked about. We're gonna need to have that discussion publicly. We have our aging population, and I would be look at me as one of those agers out here. And we have an increase. You know, the state of Alaska does, but we even have a stronger increase in the aged population. The needs of that population are going to be greater in the future. How do we maintain all this? I'm not saying we should. I'm not saying we shouldn't. I think we need to look at how we reduced our government to meet the needs of what the public wants. But at that point, then where do we go? The boroughs in Alaska have very limited choices of changes. We've had a number of things on the ballot, and those pretty well failed in the past. There's a couple other propositions on the ballot to raise very minor amounts of revenue. But is it all going to match? I don't think so. And there's where the gorilla and the discussions are going to have to come.
And Mark?
I would personally rather not see any increase in property tax and sales tax. I would rather see try to reduce cost in government by efficiencies. I've talked to young family members, young adults in town that have a couple children and two or three and in the school system, and they're talking about trying to relocate to a place that's more affordable to live. So if you raise taxes, it's even going to make them want to look even harder. And some of the elderly folks need the property tax exemption. So I would like to, you know, it's going to be something that has to be looked at pretty hard. But right now I wouldn't be in favor of it. But I know that's barely balancing the budget this year. When I was still on the assembly, the first couple readings of the budget, we were proposing using some of the marijuana tax, and that was actually in the positive line to balance the budget. We don't even know what that number is. So, yeah, it's getting tight.
Okay. Go to Brandy next.
No, I am not in favor of raising sales tax or property tax at this time. I, too, would like to see other ways of reducing or cutting back our budget before we tax people more. This is, like Mark said, for a young family, it's the cost of living here is not very low. And, you know, with mortgages and daycare and everything else, it makes it very hard when you start raising taxes. And I would, that would be the last thing that I'd like to see risen. That's where I stand on that.
Okay. And Jeff?
Nope. I'm not in favor of raising a property tax or sales tax.
Okay. Great. Just a few minutes left here, and I'll take the last question. This is an open-ended question. We've heard a lot of agreement here, and I'd just like to hear any kind of differentiation between the candidates. What makes you different? But this is open-ended. Use this 2 minutes as you see fit to tell voters about yourself and what makes you the person to check on in the voting booth. Why should people vote for you? Let's start with Will on that one.
Well, what's different is, I don't know, I guess my diversity of and perspective. I serve on a variety of different federal and state boards and commissions that give me the opportunity to see just a whole load of different perspectives, and I think I'd like to bring that kind of strength back to our assembly. I also, I believe in being very fair and equitable in everything that we as a borough government should be doing. And one thing that wasn't brought up, although it was kind of hinted towards, and I brought it up, was being a community that's conducive for young families. Again, I have four kids. One of them is just is grown now. He's 21, but I still have three that are in our school system. And I think a discussion that we need to have, and again, I don't have the answers for it. I have some ideas, but I think a question that we need to be asking ourselves as a borough government is for the last 17 years, we flatlined school funding. And that is a vital point of infrastructure for our community. I've said this before, and I'll keep on saying it again, is that when we have people that are looking to come to our community, one of the first things they look at is our school district and how healthy is our school district and how much does our community support our school district. And so I think that that is something we need to be looking at. As I've looked at the budget, and I've seen all of the increases on the vast majority of departments, that is the one department or the one entity within our community that has been flatlined. And there's been a variety of different reasons on why, but bottom line is now is I think that some of our younger grades or kindergarten through first to second grade, we're seeing increases in student counts. And so I think that's a discussion we need to have if we're going to be fair and equitable across the board.
Thank you. Go to Richard next with that one.
Yeah, I don't really know how I differentiate between the other candidates. I will be good if I get on the assembly. I've got a good track record for attendance and planning and zoning and such. I've been pretty active in local politics, especially in the last year with the Proposition 6. I don't know. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's go to Cindy next with this one. People, feel free to use this 2 minutes. Talk about whatever you'd like to.
You're in trouble now.
Okay.
No, actually, there's a couple things I wanted to talk about. In terms of how I am different than other candidates, I think everybody is committed and interested or we wouldn't be here. So I'm not going to go on at length about that. But I want to share a couple other things that we've kind of bandied about tried to talk a little bit about how do we get people more engaged in their community and local government. We've talked about, and it sounds like the department heads may be interested in doing this, so I'm saying it publicly and then we'll have to do it, doing little mini tours of departments and setting up maybe an hour. So if folks wanted to tour a facility and ask questions, if they wanted to check out the wastewater treatment plan, it's actually interesting. Same with power and light. When I first came on the assembly, wandered through there. Can't do it now that the building's being remodeled, but it's actually pretty interesting to go through and see the systems that make that work. We have once again asked to have a youth representative to the assembly. I'm really excited about getting young people engaged, and I'm looking forward to having that representation again. And finally, I had seen the idea that Anchorage had for their leadership program, Leadership Anchorage, and was really interested in doing something like that here in Petersburg. And I mentioned that to the borough manager, and we sort of spun some ideas around. And within 24 hours, and people have heard me say this little speech, within 24 hours, he had an outline in my inbox about how we could go about doing this. And I've talked to the school superintendent. The school is excited about the possibility of this idea. We would have a service project component, but the idea would be to put kids through modules, let them know a little bit more about their government, and get them engaged in how they can be involved in their community.
Thank you. Let's go to Jeff next with this one.
Well, I think the community is very fortunate. They have a choice of different people on here. We have people who are older than me, people younger than me. I have experience on the council. I have a little bit of experience on the assembly now. But one of my strengths is I like to listen to people. I don't have all the answers, but I'm willing to reach out and talk to folks to see what's important to them. It's going to be a challenging time, but it'll also be fun. And I look forward to the challenge. Thanks.
Let's go to Mark next on it.
How am I different? It could be answered a number of different ways, I guess. But why vote for me? I've lived in Petersburg all my life. I'm third generation. I know I've got a lot of history on, understand a lot of the history of Petersburg. When I was on the assembly, I felt like I was fair in many contentious situations and ran a good meeting. I grew up fishing, been in the logging industry for a couple of years, construction industry, so I know how a lot of those different types of work, operate. So I understand that. And I've want to live in Petersburg the rest of my life. I hope my kids will live here, and I want to try to make it an affordable place to live.
Thanks. Let's go to Brandy next.
How am I different? Well, like Mark, I am a lifetime resident. I am vested in this community. I have no intention of going anywhere. Beyond that, I think that I'm in a different place and a position in life than many of the other assembly members. I have a young family, kids in high school, middle school, two-year-old. I mean, I can relate to all sorts of different people. I have also been working the fish processing place, so I talk to a lot of people. I'm a very good listener. I think I'm also fair, and I think that I'm really good at weighing out pros and cons and doing the research and talking to the right people when I don't really know the answer to when I don't really have a decision. I think that it's good to reach out and get the knowledge from other people that might know more than me. So.
Thanks. Ken, you're up, and Bob has the last word.
Okay. One, I've never been in public office. I've never worked for the government other than a four-year enlistment in the Coast Guard when I was a kid. But I have been self-employed for 20 years. I have spent time in high-level management. I've made budgets and lived with them. I've made payroll. I understand that when you can't afford something, you don't buy it.
Thanks. And Bob?
I'd like to just add, earlier we talked about the budgets. You know, I have a real strong concern about the multiple layers and that we're going to put on taxation from both the federal, state, and local level, particularly on young couples. I spent a year, the last year, putting an addition with some other folks on the Children's Center. And I've watched the young people come in and out taking their kids. And I got really strong feelings for the youth and the fact that they don't have enough money to make ends meet at times. And I'd like to, I think I can be part of helping make this what I would consider a very strong, healthy community. I'm committed, and I'd like to have the opportunity to continue. That said, I'm also a good listener. I'd rather listen than I would talk. So anytime you want to send me a note, I'm certainly willing to listen or come talk. And that's, I'll finish with that.
So thank you for attending and giving us your point of view. I think that's very beneficial to the Petersburg voters. Just a reminder that the election is October 3rd from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the Community Center or by early voting and absentee ballot at the Borough Municipal Building right now during business hours. So thank you again, and thank you for attending and listening in, and good night.